Hello, guys. We're listening with Dr. Steve Weiner today, a premier expert in ultrasound for the face with facial injectables. If you haven't already heard about this trend, you might want to jump on board. Dr. Weiner thinks it's going to become standard of care for aesthetic practices. Hey, Steve.
Yes.
Introduce yourself. What's your background? How many years you've been doing this?
So I'm a facial plastic head and neck surgeon, just like you. I've been in practice over 25 years, exclusively injections for the past 15. I've been doing ultrasound for a little under 2 years. I've been pounding the table since I was introduced to it in Amsterdam by the cutaneous group. When I went there, I go, oh my God, this is going to be my future of ultrasound. And I became very adept at ultrasound during the pandemic when we were quarantined. And I ultrasound.
You were practicing all this time on yourself?
I was practicing on myself.
Wait, I saw someone do your temple. They did a temple injection with ultrasound. I thought how brave you are.
Yeah, that's how I'm actually training. During quarantine, I ultrasounded all my family members, my dog, I perfected it, and I'm still perfecting it. And you don't need to do it that much, but ultrasound will give you a clue to what's going on with your patient, even if you're a great anatomist. Things are different between patients. Anatomy is instinctively variable.
Is this something that we start our exam with these days in a facial assessment? Which should we start with a little ultrasound and mark some arteries or just understand how this face is perfusing?
I can't say universally you need to scan everyone. You'll tailor it to your practice. I think that if you're injecting areas, particularly the piriform aperture, maybe even the temples, areas that are very high risk, You want to see where the superficial temporal artery is. You want to see where the angular artery is. If their patient is unsure about prior treatments of fillers and what type of fillers, you can find the fillers. You can diagnose what the problem is with fillers that don't look right, that are swelling. And you can actually figure out the composition of fillers, too, using ultrasound. So it's clearly best in the complications area. But you want to prevent these. But if you have nodules, swelling, pain, cosmetic deformity, and particularly vascular occlusions, there's nothing better than ultrasound.
That's so interesting. And maybe we need to do ultrasound for lips. I mean, lips, because of the frequency of lip injections, is one of the most common areas for vascular occlusion, and such a fast, easy ultrasound probably to do. Is this making you more comfortable to do forehead filler?
Oh, yeah. That's not a place I do a lot, but as you know, the higher up you get in the forehead, the more superficial the vessels become. So you can confirm that in your patients. In the lips, the superior labial artery is typically below the orbicularis oris muscle. But on the lower, the inferior sometimes is below, within, or even above. And it'd be nice to know that. Sometimes I've seen inferior labial arteries as superficial as 2 millimeters. So it doesn't give you a lot of room. And yeah, it's going to take you about an extra 5 minutes. Maybe that's worth it to you, maybe not.
I definitely think it's worth it in terms of looking at dissolving vascular occlusions. So have you seen some success with this? And the typical injector is not going to have a lot of vascular occlusions, knock on wood, but is it worth it for that once a year, once every 3 year event?
I think the numbers right now are about 1 in 6,000 injections leads to a vascular occlusion. The recent study also suggested that you're 77% less likely to cause a vascular occlusion if you use cannulas versus needles, and you're 70% more likely if you're less than 5 years experience than if you're greater than 5 years experience. So most likely, most people have vascular occlusions. Here's my theory. You know, De Lorenzo has, and I love him to death, and he has the protocols for high-dose hyaluronidase. But, you know, everyone has had practice using hyaluronidase outside on filler, and it's fairly easy to dissolve most of them. I think Juvederm's a little more difficult, and Vobella is, but your other products are easy. And, you know, you can dissolve it with 1-2 vials of Hylenex. But why are we having to inject vials and vials and vials to get rid of very small amounts of filler?
Because of imprecise understanding of the depth and the location of the arteries and
that's
no x-ray vision.
That's exactly it. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of doing...
And as a surgeon, it puzzles me when I see some posts on Instagram where they did like 50 bottles of Hylenex or 20 bottles. They're like, I'm a little puzzled by that, but I cross my fingers that it'll never happen with me, and I'm glad they're telling people about it.
Right. So you're kind of carpet bombing the area, but why won't you take a strategy where you're micro-focused and you're able to deliver that target exactly? And the other thing is I'm not a huge believer of arterial migration of the hyalinex.
I don't believe that happens, that you can perfuse through an artery by poking around and into it.
I do not believe that that happens that easily. I think if you place a ton of hyalinex surrounding a vessel by just oncotic pressure, it's going to go through. But the studies DiLorenzo did were on cadavers. And after 15 minutes, the basement membrane of the artery changes and becomes more leaky. So there's another study that was done on live patients, abdominoplasty, where they injected HA filler within these vessels, tied them off, and bathed them. And there was no change inside the arterial.
The lack of perfusion.
Right.
Yeah.
And then they injected within the vessel and they cleared it immediately. So,
interesting. So should we use ultrasound to cannulate the vessel directly if we can?
That would be ideal.
Exactly. Yeah. And that also leads me to the next, like, let's say you're having problems clearing an area of a vascular occlusion. Well, why don't you just cannulate the facial artery or the angular artery? And do
get a large origin point and flood like we do with a stroke patient.
Yes.
Like an embolic phenomenon, like
right. and
like a TPA treatment.
Exactly, but you're doing it with hyalinex. And
Don't we do that? Do you think one vial shot through the facial artery would be enough? No, it'd probably be. You'd probably need like 10 cc's.
Well, the difference is sometimes there might be a clot associated, depending on how long the occlusion's been, and so then you're going to have a little trouble penetrating that. The other thing is,
will you force it distally and make a bigger problem?
And then there's the other problem, the half-life within the circulatory system of hyaluronidase is like 3 to 5 minutes.
Yeah, so I read 2 minutes somewhere.
Yeah, so it's not that long, so you have to do it more frequently as opposed to in the tissues, it's longer. And DiLorenzo's point on this is that if you're trying to dissolve that HA product, you got a lot more surface area around the outside rather than that small lumen surface area. So, you know, I'm not discounting DiLorenzo. I'm just giving another opinion.
Yeah, I definitely think it's something to consider. I use a lot of Radiesse or calcium hydroxylapatite in my practice, and of course, that really concerns me. And I was reading one recently published study that said that transarterial sodium thiosulfate is not going to go transarterial through the walls and not going to help with the vascular occlusion. So what are your thoughts on that? That's a shocker.
So I read that article actually today. It was sent.
Same
okay.
Thing.
Well, here's the thing. I've never been, enamored with STS, so I did a little study in my office, okay, and this is not scientific, but I injected Radiesse into a chicken, and then I injected STS into that same area. Chicken breast. And then I flooded it with STS, and it did disperse it, but it didn't really change it. And then I did it in a Petri dish, and I put saline on one little clump of Radiesse, and I put the STS on the other, and they looked identical. So I don't think that you can consider STS as the hyalinex of Radiesse.
No, I don't think so either. I've had 2 vascular occlusions with Radiesse, which is a lot, but I use a lot of Radiesse. And in both cases, you could definitely feel when the little obstruction clears, and I almost feel like it is just definitely the dispersion that's happening, and it breaks up sort of a mildly solid calcified clump into small particulate stuff that can just disperse away. So it's a dispersal agent, really.
Yeah.
And even you can use saline to kind of loosely flush it and disperse it, and it's interesting. I don't know.
There are recommendations. Yanni Van Lokum is probably the world's expert on calcium hydroxyapatite, and he does recommend hyaluronidase too.
So do I, yes.
It decreases the edema and its dispersal agent as well.
You might want to take down some intrinsic hyaluronic tissue just to allow some peripheral blood flow to come in. And also, so many people are full of filler everywhere, right. So dissolving years of old hyaluronic gel will open up some pathways probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm a big believer. So that, but it's such a great tool to use in our practices. I use a lot of it, but I also really am interested to make sure we have a safety mechanism, you know.
You know, I see you injecting a lot of cheeks, and particularly along the zygoma, and it brings up last month in my cadaver course, that transverse facial artery, okay? That's at risk because it's actually very superficial in some patients, just below the skin surface. And in this one cadaver, it's usually submalar, it tracked along the zygomatic arch superiorly. Mm. So...
Scary. More and more I use my hands as a tool when I'm injecting. So I really palpate and feel the foramen of the bone structure. Sometimes you'll feel a little pulse. And inevitably, where they're hollow is where there is a vascular structure, like a river running through the rock creates a groove, and a vessel does the same. So that's where you have to be supremely careful, and that's where you want to put the volume. But yeah, it's like Russian roulette every day of the week with every filler without ultrasound or any kind of guidance. So there you go. That's another case in point for using an ultrasound.
I, as you stated, the lips and the nasal labials are the most common vascular occlusion areas, and that's just because of volume. But I have seen places, again, that transverse facial is at risk a lot of times, too. Mm-hmm. I think that's underestimated to be a problem.
It's a small miracle that we don't have more and more occlusions with the large number of injectables being performed every day. I think that actually the face is very forgiving and has so much, you know, blood flow with collaterals that we get rescued over and over.
Yeah, and in particular the nose, you know?
Yes.
I know you do a lot of noses. I don't.
You're keeping a close eye on me.
And I have some ultrasounds of patients who were filled elsewhere, not with a problem, but I just said, let me look at the previous filler you placed. And that filler is like surrounding the dorsal nasal artery. So there's no plane between the two.
Yeah.
And I've seen...
This is going to terrify you from doing any injectables then. This is like, it's time for us to retire. The more you know, the more you want to be more and more and more cautious. Isn't it funny?
Yeah. Isn't there a great graph like when people start injecting, their confidence level is so high.
Always, yeah.
And then all of a sudden they start to learn stuff and their confidence level goes way down.
So true. I'm so humble these days. Yeah. I'm so fearful and so humble. And every day, like, you know, do a little Hail Mary. Like, don't let this be the day.
I do think that there are some things that, regardless of what technique and where you're doing it, is slow, move every time you're injecting, and not a large
retrograde
bolus.
If possible.
Retrograde, yeah. Mm-hmm. Some people now there's an argument, and I'm just putting it out there. It's not what I do, but there's some that say antegrade kind of pushes the vessels out of the way. I know Rod Rorick believes that, but. I do retrograde.
That's burned me a few times.
Yeah, I think so. I like the retrograde.
Same. I do too. I think it's just more natural and, like, you know, I am a big fan of injectables. I'm a surgeon like you, but the art and finesse of what we can do non-surgically, if we understand depth and planes, is pretty incredible, like the artistry you can bring to the face.
Yeah, so one thing that we talked about off the mic and we should talk about is the tear trough area. And I'm seeing a lot of tear trough problems, and it's not necessarily immediate. It could happen 2, 3, 6 years down the road. And we talked about this where I feel that the muscle around the eye, the orbicularis oculi, causes aggregation. And that's why we don't put products like Radies, PMMA, and Sculptra in that area. But I do think we get aggregation with all products, including HA. And when we're placing the product, I think that particularly in the medial area, that we're probably putting it within the muscle, and that's causing problems with constant contraction of that area.
I think so. But are you worried you're going to have to be like a corrector of all problems now that you have an ultrasound and the expertise? Every single tear trough filler problem patient is going to come and see you and get great care. But, you know.
Well, I think the majority of these cases, the ultrasound adds a little bit of definition, but they can be routinely injected with Hyalonex or hyaluronidase without ultrasound. But it's the resistant ones, and I'm seeing them in my practice. We talked about maybe pseudoencapsulation or a membrane sometimes forming where you actually have to inject within that capsule to get the best results.
That's so true. And I think tear troughs are the most problematic thing for people to learn. One of the most difficult. And I'm very tenuous about it. I use very small quantities of filler. I'm very careful about, you know, positioning. And one thing you said earlier about treat the tear trough last in the ligament area, the medial to the midpupillary line. So what's your strategy with that?
Yeah, so you always treat the lateral cheek first. Some people argue treat the temples, but that's a whole area of vascular issues. And then the medial cheek, and then I always do the prezygomatic space too. And oftentimes you really don't need to treat the tear trough. And keep in mind that not all shadows around the eye are volume. And we talked about this too, where you can actually get pigmentation. And so a test for that is moving the skin around. If the pigmentation is attached to the skin, then it's a total different issue and not filler.
It's my favorite thing to do. I pull the skin down. I say if the pigment travels, it's tattooed into the dermis, and this is a case where we need bleaching cream. And it's interesting because the filler still helps. It gives this Photoshop effect that provides some brightness and lucency there. It camouflages the underground veins and things like that. And so many patients have allergies, too, with our ear, nose, and throat background, the venous congestion there, the venous pooling. Like, I diagnose a lot of allergies sitting in the chair as well.
Right. Yeah. So there's a lot of things that call dark shadows around the eye. And the other thing I wanted to mention is don't try to be perfect around the tear trough area, because if you fill it, make it perfect, it ultimately sometimes comes back to bite you. You do not want to perforate that orbital retaining ligament and go into the lower eyelid, because that will certainly lead to problems. You want to be deep as much as possible. But in the medial aspect, you have that angular artery and vein, and those are extremely dangerous areas to be. And the angular vein does not have valves, so you can get a visual problem with that too. So just be careful very medially in that area too.
You've been around so long, you work very closely with industry, and I'm starting to do that more too. And it makes me wary of the fact that industry really wants us to sell a lot of syringes to new injectors. And, you know, it's a slightly dangerous situation. Not everybody is as understanding of anatomy, depth, and fear, and having respect and fear for the anatomy. Should they be selling these syringes to people to do tear troughs and nose injections and things without credentialing qualifications and an antidote to vascular occlusion in their office?
Great point. I was on an FDA panel, public panel in March, and their biggest fear was the eye complications. And they asked the industry, you know, do you guys do qualifications for the people you sell them? And they were represented there because they didn't want restrictions on that.
Of course, yeah.
And, you know, they said, yeah, we do trainings, but, you know, these aren't on label. Actually, there is going to be a company going on label in the tear trough in the near future. And I think that that's going to be problems.
A lot of problems, because they wash their hands of it. They say that your state has to certify you. Once you're credentialed by your state, you can buy whatever you want. But I say it's like you're selling a gun, a loaded weapon. You know, did you check their credentials? Did you make sure they're sane? Before you release the weapon, do they have a bulletproof vest or an antidote? I don't know.
Right. So we're just going to probably have more problems in that area, because they will sell the syringes. They don't care who's injecting.
Yeah.
You got to really, really respect the tear trough. I would say that even a good injector probably needs to dissolve 10 to 15% of that area.
For sure. And you feel like you're a bad person because you try so hard, you try to do everything perfect, but yeah, there's a certain percentage of things that come back to your office with little lumps for the lip or under eye, you know, Tyndall effect. These things happen. And you have to be qualified to treat it. You can't just inject it and not know how to fix the problem.
Right, exactly. And so therefore, that's why I inject in that area with something that I can easily reverse. And so I know you're using Belotero a little bit more.
A little bit of Teoxane I'm liking a lot. Actually, I love a Restylane product there. Those are the workhorse products for the under eye. They're going to be great all the time. But everything takes finesse, and I think you got to try everything to see what you like.
Right. So just inject something highly recommended that's reversible.
Yes.
Okay.
For sure.
Yeah.
Maybe PRP. once in a while.
Yeah, I haven't been impressed with that, but it certainly doesn't have much side effects. There is a case report of a vascular occlusion or even blindness, I think blindness from PRP in the literature. So it's not, you're injecting something that coagulates. So
beware. Everything beware. So ultrasound is coming. It's here. It's for real. And I'm glad you brought it to the forefront. And finally, after 2 years of you teaching, harping, learning at home during pandemic, it's coming into lecture halls everywhere. So you guys are hearing it from Dr. Stephen Weiner. Where can people find you on your Instagram?
So I have a dedicated Instagram to ultrasound. It's called Sonesthetics. And the other Instagram is Aesthetic Clinique.
Guys need to check him out and follow him. He comes up with cool teaching tips all the time, and we need mentors and leaders like you to like really sit back and critique what we're doing on a daily basis without even thinking, and how we should evolve to be better. So I love that. Love that. That's it for now, guys. You learned so much today. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K. And that's where you can find me doing amazing things with people's faces. And our online course is called Modern Aesthetic Theory. Learn from experts like Dr. Weiner and myself. And let's learn to be the best together. That's it for now. Stay safe and beautiful.